63. Funicular. Rydell had had a certain amount of riot control training in Knoxville and knew something in theory anyway about fires and natural disasters, but nothing had prepared him for the weirdness of clinging one-handed to the back of an ATV while Elmore, the meshback Chevette's friend had somehow talked into driving, gunned it back toward Bryant Street through the bridge's upper level. Rydell had never seen a vehicle here before, aside from bicycles, and he suspected that under normal circumstances they wouldn't have been allowed to get very far. But these were not normal circumstances, nor was this in any way a normal place. People were boiling out of the upper units of the squatters' community like ants out of a broken nest, and what struck Rydell about it now was the quiet with which they were doing it. These were not, in some sense, civilians, but hardened survivors, used to living on their own in a community of similar people. There were a few people screaming, and probably running the wrong way, or in circles, but from the moving vantage point of the bucking, pitching ATV it was hard to tell. Rydell's impression was mainly of determination. They'd decided that the place was burning, and they'd decided they were getting out. Most people seemed to be carrying something. A few were carrying small children, more carried household goods, and Rydell had seen at least three carrying guns. Elmore's style of getting through the crowd was straightforward. He'd gun it toward whoever was in his way, sounding an irritating little horn that Rydell suspected nobody was hearing anyway, and trust that people would get out of his way, which they managed to do, some just barely, until the ATV's right back wheel clipped a stack of yellow plastic vegetable crates and brought that down on top of a couple of heavily tattooed characters in lederhosen and paint-splattered construction boots. Elmore had to hit the brakes then, and Rydell saw Chevette flip off. He couldn't grab her because he had the chain gun in the hand nearest her and no way to put it down. Blocked by the pile of empty yellow crates, Elmore whipped it into reverse, pulled back about 4 feet, and popped it, plowing into the crates and the men in lederhosen, who promptly went lateral, swarming over the pile of crates and grabbing Elmore, who didn't look to Rydell like fighting material.
"Get off him!"
Chevette's girlfriend shouted, trying to keep from being pulled from the saddle with the driver. Rydell slung the chain gun up and put it in the face of one of the tattooed men. The guy blinked at it, looked Rydell in the eye, and started to go after him, but some cop reflex caused Rydell to bellow,
"LAPD, get on the ground!"
which made absolutely no sense under the circumstances, but seemed to work.
"This is a gun," he added,
and remembered Fontaine's advice that the chain gun was anything but directional.
"You people are crazy," snapped one of the tattooed men, bare-chested and elaborately inked, scrambling over the yellow crates, the light catching on a round steel stud in his lower lip.
His partner was right behind him. Rydell jumped down and found Chevette struggling to extricate herself from what seemed to be a pile of squashed eggplant. As he was turning back to the ATV, he saw a woman with a crew cut and serious biceps tackle Elmore, who went over into the crates.
"Where's Tessa?"
"I don't know," said Rydell, taking Chevette's hand.
"Come on."
As soon as they were away from the ATV, which in any case wasn't going anywhere, Rydell began to get the idea that something was seriously wrong here. While most of the way from Fontaine's people had been running toward Bryant, now he saw they were running back. And now you could see the fear.
"I think it's burning there by the ramp," Rydell said.
He could see the smoke now, and Rydell noticed how quickly it was thickening.
"Where's Tessa?"
"Lost her." A young girl came running, screaming, with her shirt on fire, from the direction of the city. Rydell tripped her, handed Chevette the chain gun, and bent to roll the girl over, smothering the flames. The girl just kept screaming, and then she was up and running, though Rydell saw that her shirt had been extinguished. He took the chain gun back from Chevette.
"We don't want to try that way," he said.
He didn't want to think about what might be happening there if the crowd was trying to force its way through flame.
"Come on, let's try this."
He tugged her through the doorway of a cafe, deserted, cups of coffee on the tables, music playing calmly, steam rising from a pot of soup on a hot plate behind the counter. He pulled her behind the counter and into the tight little kitchen, but found that while there were windows, they'd been barred against thieves with elaborately welded grids of rebar.
"Shit,"
he said, leaning to peer through the salt-crusted pane, trying to estimate the drop here, in case they could find a way. Now it was her turn to grab him, pull him out, but she pulled him
out into the path of a fresh batch of panicked bridge people, fleeing whatever was happening toward Bryant. They both went down, and Rydell saw the chain gun drop through a hole sawn in the deck to admit a bundle of sewage tubing. He braced for an explosion when the thing hit bottom, but none came.
"Look," Chivette said, getting to her feet, pointing. "We're at the foot of Skinner's Tower. Let's try to get up there."
"There's no way off that," Rydell protested, his side killing him as he got up.
"There's nothing to burn either," she said, "once you're past the Ponics operation."
"Smoke'll get us."
"You don't know that," she said, "but down here it'll get us for sure."
She looked at him.
"I'm sorry, Rydell."
"Why?"
"Because I was trying to make all this your fault."
"I sure hope it's not," he said.
"How've you been?"
Rydell grinned, in spite of everything, that she'd ask him this now.
"I missed you," he said.
She hesitated.
"Me too."
Then she grabbed his hand again, heading for the plastic around the foot of the cable tower. It looked as though people had cut their way out. Chivette stepped through a 5-foot slit. Rydell ducked to follow her, into warm jungle air and the smell of chemical fertilizer. But there was smoke here, too, swirling under the glare of the grow lights. Chivette started coughing. Shadows of people fleeing raced across the translucent plastic. Chivette went to a ladder and started climbing. Rydell groaned.
"What?"
She stopped and looked down.
"Nothing," he said,
starting up after her, biting his lip each time he had to raise his arms. In the distance he could hear sirens, a weird rising cacophony that blended together, wove in and out, like a concert performed by robot wolves. He wondered if it had sounded like that in the minutes after the little big one. He really didn't know how much of this ladder he could manage. It was metal, stuck to the wall with that super goop they used here, and he looked up and saw Chivette's plastic-cleated feet vanish through a triangular opening. And he realized he was smiling, because that really was her, and those really were her feet, and she'd said she'd missed him. The rest of the way didn't seem so hard, but when he got up and through, sitting on the edge of her breather, he saw that she'd started to climb up the slanted girder, hanging on to either side of the blunt-toothed track that the little car, which he could just make out up on the top, ran on.
"Jesus," Rydell said, imagining himself having to follow her. "Stay there," she said, over her shoulder. "I'll try to bring it down for you."
Rydell watched her climb, worried about grease, but she just kept going, and soon she was there, climbing into the car, which from here looked like one of the waste bins out behind Lucky Dragon, but smaller. Rydell heard an electric engine whine. With a creak, the little car, Chivette in it, started down. He got to his feet, and the smoke caught in his lungs, his side stabbing him each time he coughed.
"Somebody's been up here," she said, when she reached the bottom. "The grease shows it. I was up here earlier looking around, and there was dust on it."
"Somebody probably lives here," Rydell said, looking around at the dark flimsy walls that sheathed the tower 12 feet up from the platform he stood on. He climbed into the car, and she pushed a button. The car groaned, creaked, and started up the girder. The first thing Rydell wasn't prepared for as they cleared the screening wall was the extent of the fire. It looked as though the end by Bryant was completely aflame, huge clouds of black smoke billowing up into the night sky. Through that, he could see the lights of emergency vehicles, dozens of them it looked like, and above the creaking of the cogwheel, he could still hear the concert of wailing sirens.
"Jesus," he said.
He looked in the other direction toward Treasure, and that was burning too, though it didn't seem as intense, but maybe that was just distance.
"You got a flashlight?" Chivette asked.
He unzipped his Lucky Dragon fanny pack and fished out a little Lucky Dragon disposable he'd helped himself to back in L.A. Chivette twisted it on and started up the ladder that led to the hole in the floor of the little tower-top cube she'd lived in when Rydell had met her. Just a square opening there, and he saw her shine the light into it.
"It's open," she said, not too loud, and that made Rydell start up after her.
When he climbed through, into the single room, she was shining the light around. There was nothing here, just some garbage. There was a round hole in one wall where Rydell remembered there had been an old stained glass window before.
He saw the expression on her face in the glow from the flashlight.
"It's really not here anymore," she said, as if she didn't quite believe it herself. "I guess I thought it would still be here."
"Nobody lives here now," Rydell said, not sure why he had.
"Roof hatch is open, too," Chevette said, shining the light up.
Rydell went to the old ladder, bolted to the wall, and started up, feeling damp, splittery wood against his palms. He was starting to get the idea this might have been a very bad idea climbing up here, because if the whole bridge were going to burn, they probably weren't going to make it. He knew the smoke was as dangerous as the fire, and he wasn't sure she understood that. And the second thing he wasn't prepared for, as he stuck his head up through the hatch, was the barrel of a gun thrust into his ear. His buddy, with the scarf.